Please the court, the issue in this case is whether Orrin Neiman operated a trader business in 1991 and 1993 such to support a judgment against him in an amount in excess of $5 million. The answer to that question simply is no. I believe the focus in this case revolves around four decisions and perhaps a fifth decision. The four decisions is the United States Supreme Court case in Gretzinger and then this court's decisions in Personnel, Fulkerson, and White. The fifth decision that I would submit would be Judge Koukouras' decision denying Central States' motion for summary judgment in this case. What Central States is asking this court to do is to determine that all it needed to do at trial was tender Mr. Neiman's 1991 tax return and his 1993 tax return, some supporting schedules and source documents, and that they have then satisfied their burden of proof. They would ask this court to ignore Judge Flom's decision when you wrote for the court in Fulkerson that they must focus on the activities of the individual to determine whether, in fact, he was engaged in trade or business. Now, admittedly, at the time that this case was tried, counsel did not have the benefit of the White decision, which the Seventh Circuit decided later that summer, and Fulkerson was only 2 weeks old at that point in time. And also, admittedly, both Fulkerson and White, as well as Personnel, were summary judgment cases. But I would submit to the court that at the point in time when we proceeded to a bench trial, and in fact when Central States submitted the exact same documentation that they did in support of their motion for summary judgment, and then without putting on any live testimony, rested, this court should have granted our 52C motion for judgment on our partial finding. What this Central States is asking the court to do is to say, look at these tax returns and ignore the activity. We want you to take form over substance and just decide simply because Mr. Neiman used a federal Schedule C, which says on it, it's the profit or loss from a business, that he in fact was a trader business sufficient to impose a $5 million withdrawal liability judgment. Again, I think we're looking at form over substance if we do that. And in fact, I think the Personnel decision, as well as Fulkerson and White, says let's look beyond that. Let's look beyond simply how a taxpayer treated for monies that he or she received. Let's look at what the activities were. Central States chose not to look at the activities of Mr. Neiman and chose simply to rely upon the tax returns.
Do they have any excuse for signing and filing those returns? Does he have any excuse for filing those returns, which he says did not correctly reflect his business activity?
Certainly, and we presented that at trial. But the judge in his findings...
What was it?
That they were not trades or businesses. In fact, in
1990... My question is, why did he file those returns that showed otherwise? Did he have an excuse for filing the returns?
He believed that they were accurate. He relied upon his accountant to appropriately account for the income he received and to make sure that he paid the appropriate amount of taxes. Both Mr. Neiman and his accountant at trial testified that they did, in fact, properly account for the amount of income he received and paid the right amount of taxes. They dispute that the receipt of those 1099s from these third-party entities were because he was a trader business providing services to them in 91 as a management fee and in 1993 as a consultant. So the only evidence then the court relies upon to determine what activities Mr. Neiman engaged in were in fact testimony from Mr. Neiman and Mr. Anisgarden after our Rule 52C motion was denied. If we look at, we'll start with the 1993 return first. In addition to the Schedule C that's proffered by Central States and admitted into evidence, the other thing they offer is a proxy statement from an entity called Transcon. And Mr. Neiman used to work for Transcon, and as part of his buyout from that company, he was given a severance package. And the proxy statement states that he was going to provide consulting services. Yet we have no testimony whatsoever if he in fact did provide those consulting services at the time the 52C motion is made. What happens is when we put on our case, we have an independent third-party witness, the then CEO of Transcon, who testifies that he did not provide any consulting services whatsoever. In fact, that same proxy statement that Central States relies upon says that the consulting services would have ended 30 days prior to the date of withdrawal. That's the date we would measure whether there was this other trade or business. Even by their own document, it establishes that the trade or business had ceased. So at least in 1993, there was no trade or business that they had established.
Did he get some tax benefits by use of deductions?
Certainly he did. The same type of tax benefits that Mr. Pirelli got in personnel, that the Fulkersons got in their case, and the Whites got in their case. The focus is not strictly on whether or not he received tax benefits, because all those people received some tax benefits, be it deductions and expenses to offset income. The focus really, I would submit, is did in fact he engage in activity which this court has defined as a trade or business.
And this outside person that testified that he actually did no consulting work, you're saying that person didn't testify in the bench trial?
He did. It was through an evidence deposition, Your Honor.
Right. So Judge Dara took into account the very argument or the statement, not the statement, but the fact that you have put forth here. Judge Dara had that before him when he made his findings, correct?
He did have that before him. I will suggest, though, that if you read his decision and his findings of fact, while he notes that Mr. Keebler testified via an evidence deposition, he makes no findings at all regarding what Mr. Keebler testified about. In fact, we would submit again that testimony, uncontradicted as it is that Mr. Keeble would be in the best position as the then CEO to know if Mr. Neiman, the former CEO, provided any consulting services.
And in his opinion, he doesn't make any indication as to how he weighed or did not weigh Kibler's testimony, correct?
That is correct. In fact, if you read his findings of fact, all the findings of fact are based on testimony that was, again, presented after the Rule 52C motion was made, with one exception, that being that Mr. Neiman received money from NCO Financial and that there were schedules that were also submitted by a plaintiff showing that he received this, quote, management fee, unquote. But we truly don't know at the time that motion is made what that activity was. We have no idea if it was a brokerage fee for some activity that he engaged in years before that was just paid out over time. Without asking and requiring Central States to delve into the activities, which I submit again the Fulkerson Court requires, we don't know if he was engaged in a trade or business that was regular and continuous. While certainly we know that he derived some income, he derived some tax benefits, we don't meet the second prong of the test, and that is whether he was engaged in a regular and continuous activity. What I would request this court to do is reverse the decision of Judge Dara and on remand direct that he grant our motion pursuant to 52C and enter a partial finding of judgment, because there is simply no evidence submitted by Central States beyond the tax returns to support the position that Mr. Neiman was himself a sole proprietor, a trader business in 91 and 93. Judge Koukouras has already found that in his summary judgment. He's already stated that is not sufficient evidence, there must be more. That is why he denied Central State's motion for summary judgment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vogel. Weathers?
Good morning. If it pleases the court, Tom Withers on behalf of the Central States Pension Fund. My opponent began by highlighting the fact that we relied on the contemporaneous documents, and that's correct. And he says it as if it's a bad thing. I think contemporaneous documents are highly probative, particularly when a number of those documents are prepared by the defendant himself.
Well, how do you square what Judge Koukouras said, let's get right to the heart of it, versus how Judge Dara found, which I think you would agree that Judge Dara primarily relied on the documents, although he did have one finding where he said he didn't find Neiman credible.
Right. Our argument on summary judgment was that Mr. Neiman's tax returns constituted a prior admission under oath, and that Mr. Neiman was not allowed to introduce evidence to contradict that prior admission. Now, what Judge Koukouras found was that there is an exception to that doctrine under which a party can explain a prior admission under oath. And Judge Koukouras thought that what Mr. Neiman was intending to do was explain his tax returns, and held that Mr. Neiman had a right to make that explanation at trial rather than on summary judgment. I think if we look at what Mr. Neiman did say at trial, he contradicted his tax returns. Mr. Neiman tried to minimize the significance of the tax returns. I think the tax returns by themselves are sufficient to support the judgment. The question is whether Mr. Neiman had a trade or business under MEPA. And in personnel, as affirmed in Fulkerson, and this court has said, we're going to look to the Supreme Court's test in Grossiger to decide whether someone has a trade or business under MEPA. Well, Grossiger was deciding whether a taxpayer has a trader business to take business deductions under the tax code. And that's exactly what Mr. Niemann did here. He took over $30,000 worth of business deductions in 91 and over $100,000 of business deductions in 93. Those deductions have to be incurred in the operation of a trader business. Now, Grossinger was decided in 1987. When Mr. Niemann signs his tax returns in 1991 and 1993, he's telling the IRS that he had a trader business that met the Grossinger test, because that was the governing law at the time he signed the tax returns. He's affirming that his trader business met the Grossinger test for primary intent to generate income, that it met the Grossinger test for continuity and regularity. This is directly out of Mr. Niemann's own tax returns. That's inherent in the nature of taking the business deduction in 1991 and 1993, is that his trader business met Grossinger. It's not a casual representation that he had a trader business. It's a representation in precisely the legal context to be governed here.
And what do you think of Kibler's testimony, or at least what Judge Darrow, all he does is make reference to the fact that it was admitted because there was no objection and so it was in, but he really made no finding as to whether or not Kibler was credible or how he viewed his testimony.
Well, if you look at Mr. Kibler's deposition, he's testifying 8 years after the fact with limited recall. In 1993, Transcon issued three forms, 1099 miscellaneous to Mr. Niemann. Mr. Kibler had no recollection as to two of the three forms.
And of course, those are arguments that certainly go to the fact that Kibler was not credible, but none of that you've said is in the findings of the court, is it?
No, but what is in the record is the proxy statement that Transcon filed in 1993 at the time when Mr. Kibler was president of Transcon. They caused the proxy statement to be filed with the SEC, indicating that Mr. Niemann would be retained as a consultant. Then in the following year, they issued these forms 1099 showing that they paid Mr. Niemann as a consultant. He took the 1099s and prepared tax returns showing that he had a consulting business. I think that more than justifies the trial court in finding that Mr. Niemann had a trader business and rejecting Mr. Kibler's testimony at that point, even without comment. The weight of the evidence in the record contrary is so great, it's not worth even justifying.
So what is used? Rely at all on the fact that he was the president of Transcom in 93 for 9 months?
No, Your Honor.
Nobody seems to make much of that. I mean, is that a significant title, that he's the president?
Well, now, Mr. Niemann is going to be held liable because he operated a trader business.
Right.
In his capacity as the president of Transcom, he was an employee of Transcom. I believe he might have had some trivial amount of shareholder control, but he wasn't a controlling shareholder of Transcom. We're looking at
unlike Amtran, where he was?
Right. And South Coast, which is actually the company that was obligated to contribute to the pension fund. His tax return shows that he operated a management and consulting business during the same year. That's the trader business that we're looking to hold him liable for. Because he operated that in his capacity as a sole proprietorship. That's what generates the individual liability. And we have much more than the tax returns. I mean, I think the tax returns would justify the judgment all by itself. But in 93, we have the proxy statement. A proxy statement is not something that a company files casually. They're reviewed. There's no incentive to dissemble on a proxy statement. The SEC is in no position to block any company action. All they're interested in is accurate information. Mr. Niemann said he was paid a severance benefit or severance wages. If that's what it was, the proxy statement could have said that. It said they were going to retain Mr. Niemann as a consultant. Now, if there was some severance intent there, that's fine. But if he was retained as a consultant, that caused Mr. Niemann to operate a business. Also in 93, he had over $100,000 of business deductions. And Mr. Niemann's expense ledger was introduced at trial, showing regular and continuous business expenses. If this really was a severance gratuity dropped on Mr. Niemann, as Mr. Niemann alleged, what activity generated $100,000 in business expenses?
Is there anything in the record to indicate why Central States didn't go against any of these companies during the critical period?
I believe not, because we stipulated the control. We did actually go against the companies. We got judgments against Antran, South Coast, several other members of the control group that were uncollectible.
Uncollectible.
And then in terms of the proxy statement, is there a reference in Judge Darrow's opinion to that?
I don't remember if we referenced it specifically, but it's in the record to counter Mr. Kibler's testimony.
I was just glancing through it. I don't see it.
And I don't remember.
I make a lot of the fact that proxy statement was there and what it contained. I don't see anything in his opinion that makes any reference to it, the proxy statement.
Right. I don't remember a particular reference, but I think the existence of the proxy statement is more than sufficient to counter Mr. Kilburn's testimony. I'm coming to, you know, this court after a bench trial. I think Mr. Kibler's testimony by itself is insufficient to find clear error here.
Well, it's kind of hard to know what Dara thought of the proxy statement or Kibler, because there's
right.
nothing in here about either one.
Right. He did make specific findings, though, that Mr. Niemann operated his trader business with continuity and regularity. I think if you look at Mr. Niemann's expense statements showing, in some cases, multiple expense deductions during the same week, that shows continuity and regularity sufficient to support the judgment. Turning back to the 1991 time period, we had the cash disbursements journal showing that Mr. Niemann received management fees on a monthly basis for 15 months. Again, continuity and regularity over and above Mr. Niemann's representation on the tax return. All right, I think we've made a prima facie case. I think that's Mr. Niemann's position, that the documents by themselves are insufficient to support the judgment. I think if you look at the nature of the business deductions and the way that ties precisely into the standard to be applied under MEPA, I think the tax returns are enough. But we had much more evidence than that. And to counter that, Mr. Niemann offered nothing other than his own oral testimony. He has no documents at all. And we have a specific finding that Mr. Niemann lacks credibility. So this court has to balance all the contemporaneous documents, some prepared by Mr. Niemann, some prepared by disinterested third parties, with Mr. Niemann's incredible oral testimony. I think the preponderance of evidence clearly favors upholding the judgment.
Were there proposed findings submitted in this case?
Yes, there was, Your Honor.
By both sides?
By both sides.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
I didn't mean to cut you off.
Right? No, but if the court has no questions, I am.
All right. Mr. Vogel?
Thank you. Very briefly, if a quick review of Judge Kokoris' decision, where he stated, admittedly, both parties focus on the significance of the tax returns to the exclusion of all other considerations that aid a court in determining whether an entity or individual was engaged in a trade or business. Even if the significance of the tax returns were settled, it would not necessarily dictate the classification of an activity as a trade or business, and neither party has submitted any additional helpful evidence. Judge Kokoris, I believe, said you can't just enter tax returns and the supporting documents and say that's good enough.
Well,
you have to show something more.
Then we have a trial with Mr. Niemann testifying, right?
Mm-hmm. We do.
And we have a finding by a district judge that he's not credible. Now, can you take a not credible finding on testimony, and can that be the thumb on the scale that pushes it adversely to the defendant in this case?
You can when you judge the evidence in this case at the point in time when plaintiff rested. At the point in time when they've rested and Niemann has made his 52C motion for judgment, you don't know whether he's credible or not credible. At that point in time, you are judging whether Central States has adequately established its prima facie case. Judge Kokoris suggested that they had not. And in fact, in Fulkerson, I believe this court suggested a party has not, because you have to look at the activities. And at that point in time, we have no evidence whatsoever of what activities Mr. Niemann engaged in, either in 1991, when there was a partial withdrawal, or in 1993, when there was the complete withdrawal. The proxy statement in and of itself is not enough, because relying upon it states, in fact, that consulting arrangement ended 30 days before there was the complete withdrawal. So based on their own evidence, there is no other competing trade or business at the time of the withdrawal. Thank you all very much.
Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken